EAA's new president, and how he got his start in aviation. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. I'm privileged here to be talking with Rod Hightower, who's been a very busy guy. We've been trying to catch a few minutes with Rod ever since he took over as EAA president on September 7th of this year. In fact, before that. And finally, I don't know if I would say things are slowing down, but we were able to wedge our way into his schedule, and we want to spend a few minutes talking to Rod about his background, let our listeners get to know Rod better today. Rod, thanks for taking some time out.
Well, thanks, Paul. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'm looking at your EAA member number, 357443, so you go back a ways with the organization. Tell us how you got to become a member of EAA and how it fits into your aviation life.
Well, that's a great question to start off with. First of all, I've been a member since 1989, and what really propagated the membership was the need to find some skill and expertise that can help me accomplish a goal. And that goal was the successful completion of a project that I had purchased in 1988, which was a basket case Boeing Stearman. So it became quickly obvious that there were some skills that I needed to master in order to successfully complete this project. And, of course, you know, networking through friends and aviators, it was pretty clear that EAA had some resources that might be useful to me. And I looked into it, and sure enough, EAA looked like it would be a good thing to be a part of, and I joined in 1989, and I can tell you that it's been a valuable relationship ever since 1989.
Are you involved in a local chapter as well?
You know, I've been involved in a couple of chapters. You know, through my corporate life, I've relocated a couple of times, and I've managed to find some pretty fantastic chapters each time I've located. So the chapter life for me has been, I've been the guy at the chapter that relies on other folks to help give me some counsel and some guidance and participate in some of the fun activities that the chapters do. And my mission through those early years of a restoration that took 7.5 years was I don't spend a spare dollar on flying. I spend all my money buying things I need to complete the project.
Right.
The great amount of help from not only EAA members, but other members of the wonderful aviation community is large.
Okay, now I have to ask. I mean, a lot of people for their first project would take maybe an RV4 or something that has some factory help behind it. Why a Stearman?
Well, why a Stearman is easy. You know, I guess I have to say it's one of those questions that you ask someone, and what makes someone pick a Corvette over a Ford, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's important to remember the genesis of that. You know, when I was fairly young, I had exposure to a number of biplanes. And when you're a young child, you really don't know what you're looking at. You don't really appreciate what they are. But when I was 16 years old, working at an FBO where I learned to fly, we had a Boeing Stearman stop in and refuel. Well, Stearmans were pretty rare, you know, even back in the mid-70s. So it was a pretty interesting airplane to have an experience with. And, of course, as being a line boy who's pumping gas and mowing the grass and doing everything in between, I spent a little time refueling that airplane and talking to the owner. Not only was I impressed with the ruggedness and the sturdiness of the Stearman, but the owner took some time to tell me a little bit about its history. And the Stearman is a very important part. You know, it's an iconic airplane in the history of aviation. The Boeing Stearman trained more World War II pilots than any other. I mean, there were 8,500 of these made, you know, at a time when the nation was in a really interesting time and the nation was really strong and unified. And I talked to so many pilots since who learned to fly the Stearman back in the war days, and they still speak of it, you know, as one of the most interesting experiences of their life and one of their favorite airplanes of all time. And, of course, I thought that was a gorgeous airplane. I didn't really appreciate all the other things that the Stearman would teach you to be good at as an aviator, but it was one of those airplanes where I said, you know, I like that. And not only that, but the guy that was flying the Stearman at the time made a positive and a lasting impression on a real young aviator.
Okay, now you're talking about going back to your earliest aviation roots, and I know your bio talks about Texas, but that's not the whole story, right?
You know, the story that's the thing that I like to talk about is when I talk to other aviators, you know, I always like to ask the question, what was your source of inspiration? Where did you first have that interest level that might lead you into aviation? And then I want to hear what the next step and the next step and the next step was to how you found yourself in the place that you are as an aviator. And for me, you know, it began at a very young age. You know, I was 3 or 4 years old growing up in Mesquite, Texas, we had a Dallas Naval Air Station not far from our house, which I still think to this day is kind of funny that there's a Naval Air Station landlocked in the middle of Dallas, Texas. But the jets would fly over our head. You know, they would fly over the house. And, I mean, that was back in the 60s when the sonic booms were okay. And those guys would come screaming over as a flight of two, a flight of four, and sometimes, you know, bigger. So it was pretty impressive as a young man to see that happen. And, of course, the sonic boom would come along and bang, bang, you know. Windows would rattle, the dishes would shake, and my mom hated it, but my brother and I loved it. You know, we couldn't get enough of that. And then the next step for me was age 8 when we were on vacation out west, and my parents bought my brother and I a little ride in a Bell 47 helicopter around Mount Rushmore. And boy, for me, that was the first time I'd ever left the ground in anything other than jumping out of a tree with a trash bag over my head. The ride in the Bell 47 sealed it for me. You know, I said, boy, this is something I think I can be a part of. And then the next step for me came at age 16. My brother and I had started a business at age 15, so we had a little bit of extra, you know, money in our pockets as far as teenage high school kids go. And after a hard day in the fields, I drove myself out to the airport one beautiful afternoon and looked for someone who I thought might be able to help me understand how I might go about taking flying lessons. And what that led to was an encounter with a gentleman by the name of Jerry Short. As I walked into the office of the FBO, people were busy running about doing their things. And there sat this older gentleman over in the corner at a table, you know, writing in a long, skinny black book. And to me, as a 16-year-old, he looked pretty approachable, looked like a nice guy. So I pulled up a chair, sat down next to him, introduced myself, said I'd be interested in talking to someone about learning to fly. Could you help me out? Well, he looked me up one side, down the other, you know, and introduced himself as Jerry Short and said, yes, I'd be more than happy to talk to you. And he began to ask me some questions. You know, what's your genesis of interest? Where did you think you might want to learn how to fly? So I told him my story. And in the course of that 15 or 20 minutes, what I think Jerry Short was really doing was sizing me up economically to determine if I could afford to pay for flying lessons or not. But in the course of that, Jerry was really finding out about, you know, the foundation of my interest and where my inspiration may have come from and what my interest level really would be. And something really cool happened next. We went for a plane ride. And that was the first time I'd been in a fixed-wing airplane, you know, at age 16 in a Cessna 150. So Jerry was smart. You know, he took me out, gave me a little bit of an introduction to the airplane, and in we go. And we flew over my house, we flew over my school, we flew over my friends' houses and farms, and any of those things were of interest to me at the time. And then I thought, you know what, not only can I do this, but I think this is going to be a lot of fun. So I began my flight instruction at age 16, signed up for ground school, and got on the process right there.
When we return, relating the story we just heard with today's Young Eagles program. More with new EAA President Rod Hightower in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/piperaircraft.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Rod Hightower, who became EAA's new president last month. Before the break, Rod described his own start in flying at age 16, and it sounds a little like today's Young Eagles program. Rod, based on your personal experience, what do we have to do to find the young people who will be tomorrow's pilots?
That is one of my favorite topics, Paul, and I think, you know, if I might just frame that what I'm about to say next up a little bit, there is something that as an aviator, and by the way, I've never been a professional aviator. I had a stint in college where I flew skydivers on weekends to build a little bit of time, but I'll tell you that, you know, I can't call that professional because you sure can't make a living doing that.
Right.
But the one thing I would say about the aviation community that it has not done, it's done many great things, by the way, but it has not done is it has not reached out and extended an invitation to the populace that says, welcome in. This might be an interesting place for you. This might be something you would find not only interesting, but also challenging. You know, aviation is, it's technical, it's artistic, it's fun, it's entertaining, and it's challenging at the same time. So what a breadth and depth of an opportunity that someone can participate in. So I think that's the one thing that aviation probably has not done really well. They spend a lot of time in the aviation industry talking to each other and convincing ourselves that something needs to be done to grow aviation. But out in the greater populace is where, you know, young people like Rod Hightower at age 8 and at age 16 reside. And the Young Eagles program has been amazingly successful because it is the one channel that has reached into the populace, opened up the highway, and allowed young people, and what's more important or as important as the young people who are about to possibly have their first flying experience, it opens up the opportunity for the mentoring process that first starts with their parents. It opens up the opportunity to make friends of their family toward aviation. So there's a lot richer dimension to that invitation, if you will, than just the act of a plane ride for a youngster between the ages of 8 and 17. So what was left to the individual's motivation and interest and means prior to Young Eagles has been formalized into one of the most successful youth outreach programs on the planet. We've flown up 1.6 million Young Eagles. More importantly, or as importantly in my opinion, we've impacted their families in a positive way and given them an experience that not only do they talk about for the rest of their lives, but they can go out and talk about this with others in a more knowledgeable, certainly an improved and educated manner that will more than likely let them understand aviation, and they can all pass their own judgments about its usefulness or its interest to them.
Tomorrow, is security theater at airports getting in the way of the kids who look through the fences? Rod's answer may surprise you. Rod Hightower is the president of the Experimental Aircraft Association. Find out more at EAA.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.